Shelling and gunfire continued in northern Syria today, a day after Vice President Mike Pence said Turkey had agreed to a five-day pause in the fighting to stop attacking Kurdish-led militia. A spokesman for the Kurdish forces, Mustafa Bali, said Turkey is continuing to pound civilian areas as well as a hospital in northern Syria. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan spoke to reporters in Istanbul today and disagreed with those reports. Erdogan said, "I do not know where you receive information from, but according to the information I get from my defense minister, there are no ongoing clashes." He said reporters have misinformation. President Trump said no shots are being fired and the Kurds are very happy.
"I just spoke to President Erdogan of Turkey. We're doing very, very well with Turkey. There's a ceasefire or a pause or whatever you want to call it. There was some sniper fire this morning. There was mortar fire this morning that was eliminated quickly. And they're back to the full pause."
The deal brokered by the Trump administration is a victory for Turkish President Erdogan. It gives Turkey a sphere of influence in northern Syria. Trump has also handed a gift to Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. Assad has been suppressing a rebellion in Syria with brute force for 8 years. In the chaos of the past 2 weeks, Assad has regained control of nearly a third of Syria. I sat down with correspondent Sam Dagger to talk about just how the Assad family has managed to remain in power for decades. Dagger is the author of Assad or We Burn the Country, How One Family's Lust for Power Destroyed Syria.
They've been around for 50 years. They've outlasted 8 U.S. presidents since Richard Nixon. So they've been playing this game before, using terrorism as a bargaining chip, as leverage in their dealings with Western powers. Right after 9/11, Bashar al-Assad initially sent a letter to George Bush saying, "I want to cooperate with you. I want to help you, you know, fight al-Qaeda." In fact, for a short period, the infamous CIA rendition planes were making stops in Damascus, handing over al-Qaeda suspects to be tortured in regime prisons. So initially, he was cooperating with the U.S. in the fight against terrorism. Then he feels threatened after the swift toppling of Saddam Hussein. What does he do? He supports the insurgents in Iraq. And then he rounds up all the jihadists that he had helped get to Iraq through Syria, puts them in prison, and gets, as a result, some sanctions relief from the Americans. John Kerry met with him at least 5 times between 2008 and 2009. And he gets sanctions relief. He begins to be, again, treated as a reformer who's trying his best in this difficult neighborhood. And then fast forward to the uprising 2011. The first thing he does a month into the uprising is he releases more than 1,000 militants from prison that he had put in prison, you know, a couple of years before.
So to the question, how has the Assad family been able to remain in power for nearly half a century? It sounds like you're saying through a kind of extortion scheme.
Absolutely. So the extortion in its dealings with the outside world, with Western powers, but domestically, it's a very brutal regime. I mean, they have one of the most elaborate police state system in place. We're talking about intelligence services made up of 4 directorates. Every directorate has branches in every city and town.
The Mukhabarat.
Precisely. So your neighbor is watching you. I mean, your neighbor is calling the Mukhabarat saying, you know, "I saw something suspicious." And I was told by people in Germany that the infamous Stasi, the secret police in East Germany, former East Germany, helped Hafez al-Assad, the father, construct the Mukhabarat.
So now with a family in Damascus that has kind of taken to co-opting terrorists for their own goals, now these ISIS fighters are fleeing from prisons formerly held by the Kurds. I mean, what do you see happening now?
Yeah, I mean, this is the biggest worry. We don't have evidence of it yet, but last December 2018, when President Trump announced he was leaving Syria, if you recall.
Yeah.
But then his generals and the defense secretary intervened and he basically dialed back and he said, we're going to leave, you know, at least 1,000. And at the time, some French officials, senior French officials of the Macron administration that I'm in touch with, I met with them in Paris, and they told me that one of their biggest worries at the time was that the YPG, the Kurdish faction that both the French and the Americans and the Brits and other Western powers had been cooperating with to fight ISIS, had begun talks with the Assad regime. And one of the things that the Assad regime, and again, this is based on French intelligence,
right.
One of the things that the Assad regime had asked for from the YPG was give us some of these ISIS prisoners, particularly the ones that have, you know, French or British citizenship, and we will take them.
And why do they want them, did they say?
To basically use them as leverage to extort France and Britain, and to say to France and Britain, either you remove sanctions on us, because, again, you have to remember also the Russians at the time had been asking the French and the Germans to pay for the reconstruction of Syria, and they had balked. And Assad would basically tell the French, look, I have your citizens. I mean, effectively, these are like French and British and European citizens. They're in my prisons. What do you want me to do with them? Keep them or send them back to you, basically? If you want me to keep them, then you have to remove sanctions. You have to give me some money to rebuild parts of Syria that he and his main backer, Russia, had basically destroyed in their scorched earth campaigns. And also potentially reopen your embassies. So that's the game he would play, and that's what the French officials told me. I mean, that
feared, was their concern.
That was their main concern, yes.
I'm speaking with Sam Dagher, who is the author of Assad or We Burn the Country. You've been detained in a Syrian prison. You've seen brutality in many corners of Syria up close. Do you think we here in the West appreciate just how ruthless the Assad regime is?
I don't think so. Because, again, you have to remember the image we see is this soft-spoken, fit, tall, professional eye doctor with a beautiful wife, born in Britain, speaks flawless English with a British accent. And we say, oh, they look like us. I mean, look at his children. Even his kids are like, you know, this picture-perfect family. They could be anywhere. They could be in Europe. It could be like the Danish ruling family or something. And then we find it hard to believe that someone like that would commit all these crimes.
Yeah, what did you experience that suggests the exact opposite of that image?
Again, I mean, I spoke to people who were inside the regime, in the inner circle, who were explaining to me the tools of the deception, basically, how all of this was orchestrated before the death of his father, Hafez al-Assad. It was a way for this regime to reinvent itself, to repackage itself. I mean, you have to remember the context of all of this in 2000. A decade before the Berlin Wall had fallen in 89, the Soviet Union had unraveled, the Soviet Union being the main military and political backer of the Syrian regime. And the Syrian regime had to pivot to the West, had to reinvent and repackage itself. And everything they did was very deliberate, including the choice of this wife, of this match between Bashar and Asma al-Assad.
Sam Dagher, the author of Assad or We Burn the Country, How One Family's Lust for Power Destroyed Syria. It's great to finally meet you. Thank you for being here.
My pleasure, Marco.